Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Nonviolence, The History of a Dangerous Idea is a short historical and political work by Mark Kurlansky that examines nonviolence as an active method of social change rather than a passive moral preference. Framed with a clear argument and wide historical scope, the book moves from ancient religious and philosophical traditions to modern anti-war and civil rights struggles. Kurlansky presents nonviolence as a practical strategy that has repeatedly challenged empires, dictatorships, and militarized states, even when it has been dismissed as unrealistic. The book also asks difficult questions about the limits of pacifism, the meaning of just war, and why violent systems so often respond to peaceful resistance with repression. Its purpose is both historical and argumentative, to show that nonviolence has a serious record, a coherent logic, and continuing relevance in public life. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, nonviolence as a political technique, not a passive ideal. Kurlansky's central distinction is that nonviolence should be understood as an organized technique for confronting injustice, not as mere personal gentleness or moral sentiment. That framing matters because it moves the discussion away from abstract ethics and toward action. In the book, nonviolence is treated as something people do collectively organize. Refuse cooperation, expose injustice, and pressure power without mirroring the violence they oppose. This gives the idea a strategic dimension. It is not presented as automatically easy, morally pure, or universally successful, but as a disciplined method with historical evidence behind it. By defining nonviolence in this way, Kurlansky challenges the common assumption that it is only a private virtue or a spiritual posture. He instead places it alongside other forms of political struggle, asking readers to judge it by results as well as principles. That approach is what gives the book its polemical force and its analytical structure. Secondly, a global history that links religious ethics to modern resistance movements. The book's historical range is one of its defining features. Kurlansky traces nonviolent thought and practice across major traditions, including ancient Hindu and Buddhist contexts, Christian pacifist ideas, and later secular political movements. He then connects those traditions to familiar figures such as Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., showing how earlier ethical and religious currents were translated into modern mass politics. This broad arc helps the book argue that nonviolence is not a recent invention or a narrow Western liberal preference. Instead, it appears repeatedly in different cultures whenever communities search for ways to resist domination without armed force. The value of this historical method is that it places civil rights and anti-colonial struggles inside a longer continuum, rather than treating them as isolated moral exceptions. It also allows Kurlansky to compare different settings and show how similar patterns of repression and mobilization recur across time. The result is a history that is interpretive as well as descriptive. Thirdly, why violence often strengthens the systems it claims to defeat. A major argument in the book is that violence frequently functions as a tool for preserving existing power, rather than resolving conflict. Kurlansky repeatedly emphasizes that states, armies, and dominant institutions tend to respond to peaceful dissent with coercion, surveillance, imprisonment, or force. This is not just a historical observation, but a structural claim. When nonviolent movements threaten authority, violent responses can expose the moral weakness of the system, and sometimes increase sympathy for the resistors. The book uses examples such as Gandhi and King to show that repression can backfire, turning apparently weak movements into powerful symbols. Kurlansky also questions the assumption that military power provides reliable deterrence, suggesting that large arsenals and standing armies often create an illusion of security rather than genuine safety. By making this argument, he reframes violence as a recurring failure of political imagination. The point is not that violence never produces short-term outcomes, but that it often deepens the conditions that make injustice and war possible. Fourthly, the book's challenge to just war logic and the mythology of necessity, Kurlansky does not simply praise peace in the abstract. He pushes into harder territory by asking whether there is such a thing as a just war, and whether even the worst regimes could have been confronted differently. These questions matter because they test the common belief that violence becomes acceptable once it is attached to a noble cause. Rather than accepting that premise, the book invites readers to examine how often war is justified after the fact, while its human costs are minimized. Kurlansky's approach is provocative because it does not deny moral complexity, but it refuses to let necessity become a blank check. He is especially interested in how societies normalize war as inevitable, when in fact nonviolent alternatives may have been neglected or underdeveloped. This makes the book less a simple manifesto than a sustained challenge to political common sense. Its argument is strongest when it forces readers to consider how much of war culture is habit, rhetoric, and institutional inertia rather than genuine last resort. Lastly, a compact book with limited practical steps but lasting interpretive force. Although the book offers 25 lessons, it is not a how-to manual in the ordinary sense. One of the most common criticisms is that its guidance can feel broad rather than procedural, especially for readers looking for a detailed roadmap for organizing campaigns. That limitation is real, but it also reflects the book's goal. Kurlansky is less interested in giving a step-by-step activist handbook than in changing how readers think about history, power, and resistance. Because the book is concise, it can move quickly across large historical patterns and make a cumulative case without getting buried in method. Its strength lies in synthesis. It connects scattered examples into a coherent argument that nonviolence has been historically consequential and strategically serious. This makes the book especially useful for general readers, students, and activists who want a historical framework rather than a technical manual. Even when readers disagree with its conclusions, the book remains effective as an interpretive challenge to conventional narratives about war and political change. In conclusion, this book is best suited to readers interested in history, political theory, social movements, and the ethics of conflict. It will appeal to people who want more than a simple praise of peace, because Kurlansky treats nonviolence as a serious political instrument with a long and contested history. Students and general readers can use it to understand how resistance movements gain legitimacy, how states react to dissent, and why war is so often presented as unavoidable. Activists may find it useful as a source of historical perspective, even if they want more practical organizing guidance than the book provides. What makes it stand out in its genre is its combination of brevity, ambition, and argumentative clarity. Many books on peace either become devotional or narrowly policy-driven. This one is broader, more historical, and more openly disputatious. It is not neutral, but it is intellectually serious, and that gives it unusual force. Its value lies in the way it turns nonviolence from an ideal into an analytical lens for reading history and public life. If you would like to support Mark Kurlansky, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.